Final hour, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Paul Kuharski, Nick Kieser here with you on this Thursday morning. And as we do every Thursday morning at 8 o'clock, we go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And welcome in our friend Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports. Charles, good morning. How are we doing?
So Vandy beats Alabama and Joe goes on vacation.
Yes. Of course. Right, of course. To the beach.
And he's proud of it. He's like, yeah, I'm vacationing in season. Isn't that cool? I'm like, no, nobody, no football writer vacations during football season.
That's crazy. Yeah. That's wild. I guess he could. I mean, geez, Florida's such a mess right now, too. I hope he's okay. I should text him when I get off.
Yeah, he's in a safe place.
He texted us a photo yesterday of him in a T-shirt with a Tigers helmet on.
Helmet.
The game,
he wears a helmet because he bumps into walls and stuff.
He's got a lot to protect upstairs.
He does.
Right?
He does. There's no doubt. No doubt about that.
That's his moneymaker.
That's right.
So don't mean his face.
Yeah,
we do not.
That's right. Definitely not his face. So what do you make of the Jets dismissing Robert Saleh when they're heading into a game that could have put them in first place in the division? Aaron Rodgers, of course, says he's uninvolved. Nobody believes that. Todd right. Downing, of all people, is going to call plays after his great successful run here in Nashville. Things seem awfully messy.
Yeah, I mean, I think what's important here is, number one, and you hit on it, it's not realistic that Rodgers had no idea that this was coming, right? Like, he's an executive there with the Jets. And the idea that you would make a change and not at the very least run it by Aaron to make sure he's not going to be wildly upset about it is absolutely implausible. But the problem is, too, there's two people who have that conversation. It's Aaron Rodgers, it's Woody Johnson. And if they both say it didn't happen, then it didn't happen, right? It's the whole cat in the box thing. You know, as long as you have a cat in the box, as long as you don't open the box, the cat is alive forever. So it's hilarious to me, though, that he comes out, you know, he's obviously on the Pat McAfee show. At no point is he asked, what do you think of the decision? Like, what's your thoughts on Saleh, you know, being fired? Was it the right decision? Was it the wrong decision? He never has that question put to him. I will say this. What was interesting to me was when you talk to people who knew exactly what was going on with Woody Johnson, the first thing that I was told was, you know, Woody has not been impressed historically with Robert Saleh, and it was not his hire. You know, this was something that happened when he was on his ambassadorship. He was obviously in the loop on it, but he didn't find Saleh to be the guy that, quote unquote, what I was told the media made him out to be, being this, you know, fiery leader and this tactician and all these things. Woody did not feel that Saleh was that level of a coach. And, you know, to paraphrase here, someone said to me, like, you know, I think Woody was dragging this around for a while, like sort of waiting for this opportunity to make this change, because he is a huge fan of Jeff Ulbrich, who is the defensive coordinator there. He's had an affinity for Jeff Ulbrich for a while. And I think he felt, you know, when I was told, Woody felt like this was a critical juncture, and it was the opportunity to make the change. And ultimately, when I asked about Nathaniel Hackett, I was like, was this a Nathaniel Hackett saving moment here? I was told that Woody isn't a big fan of Hackett either. Doesn't think Hackett's a great play caller. Doesn't think that he's done a good job as a head coach. And that Hackett's on a short leash now, too. And if he does call plays against Buffalo and the offense does not perform, he's going to be demoted. And he could be demoted prior to the Buffalo game as the play caller, as you said, for Todd Downing. And look, it's just a massive mess there. I don't think that it's not a well-run organization at this point, and changes like this that happen early in seasons don't typically end up really setting teams on the right track. I mean, it can happen, but it's more often than not chaos and mess. It's not something that gets swept away with just one coaching change.
So, Charles, we were talking about this earlier in the show. Cincinnati, 1-4, they got that game won yesterday, and one of those things where, you know, the Burrow plays great, the field goal they botch at the end of the game there, and all of a sudden they find themselves staring in the face of 1-4. You know, Burrow looks like he's playing really well right now. The defense has some big problems.
Right.
Cincinnati, are they done? Is this too big a hole to climb out of? What's gone wrong with them this year and how they've gotten themselves into this point?
Well, I mean, I think the one positive that you take away from that loss is you saw the Joe Burrow that you saw the guy that took you to a Super Bowl, who played. I mean, he was lights out. This was some of the best football I've seen from Joe Burrow in a really, really long time. I think the fact that T. Higgins is back in the lineup and it's once again more cohesive, they're getting something out of Chase Brown. You know, it just looked more like a well-oiled offense. I think that is the reason why they don't think they're out of it yet. Plus, when you look at the schedule, look, they're going to go on the road against the Giants. Very winnable game. They're going to go on the road against the Cleveland Browns. Absolutely winnable game. You got a quarterback there who can't be benched but might be the worst quarterback in the NFL right now. And then you have two home games against a Philadelphia Eagles team right now that's got its own brand of struggles, and then the Las Vegas Raiders. You could go 4-0 at this stage, the next month of the season. So I think leaning into what the offense is doing well, as you said, the defense is horrible right now. They can't get any pass rush. Their front seven is a total mess. It's going to be a sort of a track meet team, and I think they know that at this stage. It's not going to be easy to fix that defense. But if the Burrow against, the Baltimore Ravens, if that's real, if he's back to that level of play and the offense continues to look like what it looked like against the Ravens, I think they feel like they can win games offensively and be back in the mix a month from now.
What do you make of Jim Trotter's settlement? I'm happy for him. I'm friends with him. He got something that he wanted. He's going to fund scholarships with NFL money.
Yeah.
But it sure would have been nice to know how much money, how much the NFL is quote-unquote hurt. We know they're not that hurt. But he could have taken this thing. He obviously had a good case. He could have taken the NFL to court. He could have won publicly, which would have been a very effective thing to have done against them. I'm just curious what you make of what he could have done versus what he did.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's, he's a friend as well. I've known Jim for, 20 plus years. And I knew all along that there was a possibility that he would settle this case if he felt like he could, as you said, fund scholarships. If he basically, I knew his thought process was, if I can do something good, and it becomes, do I drag this out for my own purposes, for my own ability to stand there and go, look, I was wronged, and here's what's going on here, and let me expose all this, or do I say, okay, it the money is where it is, or the settlement is where it is, and it's allowing me to do some level of good with, basically attacking the problem that he sees, which was a lack of diversity in that newsroom, attacking it in a different way, which was to provide opportunities to other journalists of color. And that was, I think, the option that he ultimately took. I don't want to speak, it's his decision. It's you never know. That's the one thing with these cases. You never really know what's going on behind the scenes in terms of, financially, how long could this drag out? What's going on with the lawyers? I think there's a lot that goes into it. I personally, for my own purposes, I'd love to have seen the NFL aired out. And I felt that way with, the John Gruden lawsuit. I'm like, okay, here's an opportunity for this to get aired out. The Brian Flores lawsuit. The problem is the NFL is what they are. I mean, they're typically undefeated when it comes to the courtroom. And if they're not undefeated, they have a paycheck. They have they have an ability to write paychecks and basically have a bank account victory. And I don't know. I don't know how to solve that. I don't know. I don't know at what point. Anybody can really get up under the, if Congress can attack them, and look over the last couple of decades, if there are times where the Congress can look at them and raise the question of, antitrust or concussions, all these other things that we've seen the U.S. government approach the NFL on and the league walks away unscathed. I don't know what any individual, whether it's a head coach, former head coach, whether it's a former journalist that worked inside their operation, or really anyone else, Colin Kaepernick, has what kind of chance they really have long term against the league. At some point, I imagine there will be someone who's able to, penetrate that armor legally, but it I don't know who that is. I don't know how it would happen.
Take another Al Davis. That's a good point. Sticking with lawsuit guys, Brian Flores is killing it. Killing it. Yeah. No, everybody wants to hire an offensive guy. What's his future as a head coaching prospect, given the work he's doing, but also given the lawsuit that he's involved with?
Well, Paul, not only the lawsuit, but remember, he aired out Stephen Ross for tampering.
He did.
Right? I mean, like, yeah, I mean, it's not just that. It's if you're going to make that hire, there are so many different avenues as an owner you have to now confront. Like, do you trust him? Because and again, this is not passing judgment on Brian Flores in any way, shape, or form, but I don't know how you could trust him, because certainly Stephen Ross thought, hey, we're all working together here, and, you know, there's a line that you don't cross, you know, in terms of trust. And I think a lot of NFL clubs tamper, and, you know, that's when you talk to anyone who's really reasonably willing to talk to you about it, they'll tell you, everybody knows that's a line you don't cross. Like, if you do it, you just keep your mouth shut, you keep it moving. He didn't do that. And so I think that, to me, is probably beyond his coaching, beyond the lawsuit, anything else. I think an owner has to decide, do I trust Brian Flores at this point? And it wasn't just the Miami Dolphins who, you know, he kind of put on blast. It was, okay, I went and did this interview in Denver, and that was a sham interview, and here's what happened during that interview. And it's just a multitude of different things. He kind of burned Bill Belichick. People still talk, you know, owners call Bill Belichick and they ask him, you know, his advice on making hires. And I don't think that at this point, I don't think it would reflect well. If someone called and asked Bill about Brian, he'd probably say, yeah, he's a great coach. And then you asked, do you think you can trust him? Bill would probably be like, I don't want to answer for Bill. But I mean, it's the trust issue, I think, to me, is what's going to get in his way. It's not the coaching. I think he's the best defensive coordinator right now running in the NFL in terms of what he's doing, all the, you know, the post-snap rotations. I mean, it's any offensive coach you talk to will tell you it's horrific having to deal with going into a game against him. So it's just, I'm fascinated to see how this turns out for him, because if you remove what happened in Miami in terms of that lawsuit and the things that he put in it, every other indication to me, even with hiring offensive coaches, would tell me that he should be at the very top of a lot of lists when it comes to a head coaching search. I don't think that will be the case.
Charles Robinson with us here on Robbie and Rex Row. Charles, what's your concern level at this point with San Francisco with a 2-3 start?
Man, that's a good question. You know, it's sort of how I feel with, you know, a number of teams. It's sort of, where are they injury-wise? How quickly, you know, does that get better? Is this what they are without Christian McCaffrey on the field? Like, is he so dynamic that when you remove him, you know, from that offense, suddenly you have a team that is, you know, I mean, it's not like they're not scoring points, but 23 points against Arizona, 24 points against the Rams, 17 points against Minnesota, you know, that's a month. I mean, they had the game against New England. They scored 30, but I mean, New England is a JV team at this stage. Every other competent team that they played, they struggled, you know, to put points up. And so, yeah, I mean, that's a little bit of a concern. And then when you, again, I keep looking at the schedule. So you're going to go to Seattle. You're going to be at home against Kansas City. You know, you're going to go play Dallas, that suddenly feels like they're starting to get themselves gathered. Yeah, I'm a little concerned. I think by the bye week, you know, could there be panic? Could you be, what, you're 2-3 now? I mean, it's possible you could be, I don't know, 3-5 going into your bye week, and now you're teetering on you know, getting the season getting away from you. So I'm concerned. I don't think offensively they look as good as they could. And I think a lot of that does have to do with the injuries. And I think we are probably underplaying how much Christian McCaffrey means to that offense. I have my doubts that Christian McCaffrey plays this year. I just don't like that when someone has to go to Europe.
Yeah.
It's a whole other signal to me in terms of what's potentially going on with that injury. And I think that there's a chance that as it gets away from them, you know, if he does return, they might be out of it by the time we get to December.
Charles, Denver has won 3 in a row And Bo Nix, obviously, at the helm there, Sean Payton, and they're trying to, you know, revamp that franchise. Are you buying Denver? Are you a believer in what Bo Nix and Sean Payton are doing?
Ferris Bueller.
I did see that. Yeah. That was awesome.
Yeah, that was pretty entertaining. I buy them from this. Look, it's not been a good – Bo Nix is a good story, you know, because he's obviously – he's got talent. I think he's challenging Sean Payton in a way that Sean Payton really enjoys. There's a lot of faith that Sean Payton has in him. That said, you know, yeah, they put up 34 against the Raiders, but by and large, the offense has not really looked great. Bo Nix has had his moments. But I'm buying that they are a team that will be competitive all year long. And when I went through there, I'm trying to remember exactly what the over-under was on games won in Vegas. I think it might have been 5.5, something like that. Sean Payton was upset. He was not happy that he said to me something like, the next time I win only 6 games or win only 5 games will be the first time I only win 5 games or 6 games. Like, Payton prides himself on having teams that are competitive, and I think they're coming along, you know, with Nix, but I don't think it's – I don't see it being a team that all of a sudden is going to turn the corner and, you know, rip off a 5-6 game winning streak and suddenly be a team that we're sitting there staring at and going, hey, this is – it's turned into a playoff, you know, team, an actual potentially contending team in 2025 just because they've made this change at the quarterback position and Sean's retooled so much of that roster, which, by the way, they have. I mean, there's – the number of defensive changes that they've made in terms of the roster and then offensive, if you go back and just look at the state of the roster when Sean Payton got in there, it's pretty stunning, you know, the sort of the remake that they've had, the remodel they've had under him. But I still think they're probably a year away from you know, continuing to gather talent and tinker with that offense and get it to the point where it's going to be as efficient as Sean Payton thinks it can be.
What do we think Jimmy Haslam's trying to prove by insisting, as we all presume, that Deshaun Watson remain in the lineup? He wants to prove that they botched guaranteeing this money for a suspect guy?
I don't know that it's him, you know, trying to prove something as much as it is he took all the tools out of the tool bag with this decision. Like, it's, you know, it was the contract itself was a Jimmy Haslam contract, right? We just need to get, everybody needs to understand that. Like, it was the owner is the reason why Deshaun Watson got a fully guaranteed 5-year deal at $230 million because he knew we are not getting him unless we do this kind of a deal. We have to come over the top and basically give him every single thing that he wants in order to get him into the franchise. If that had not occurred, if it had been more of a traditional situation where you have the general manager weighing in, Paul D. Podesta, who's the chief strategist or whatever, and then you have, you know, Kevin Stefanski, the head coach, I think if Deshaun Watson does a more sort of market kind of deal at that time, we're staring at a contract where he's probably got about $60 million still due him, which makes him cuttable. He would have been a cuttable player after this season. He was post-June designation. You split the money up. You take the hit. You move on. Unfortunately, they had to move money around, move money, you know, back in the contract to create cap space. And, you know, now getting rid of him, it's an extinction-level event for that franchise. You'd have to cut half the roster to be able to take the accelerated cap hit to get rid of him. And knowing that's the case, what else can you do? Like, I've asked other NFL executives, like, give me some creative options here. What are the creative options? There's the, well, you just bench him and you eat it. You just eat it in public, you know, you eat it with him, you know, and you tell him, look, if you don't want to be benched, you're going to be the highest, you know, paid bench player in the history of the league. If you don't want that to happen, let's talk about your money and figure out a way to get you out of here. That would lean into Deshaun Watson giving some money back. That's never going to happen. Okay. So right. You can go ahead and take that off the table. Someone else said to me, you go the Brock Osweiler route with Denver, strap him with draft picks, basically say, hey, here's Deshaun. Here's 2 first round picks. You take that and you
it
take
costs
his money
even more.
Yeah. Yeah. You just, you're right. You try to sell that contract by attaching draft picks to it and deal him that way. You know, it's not going to happen. So I think they're backed into a corner here where the thought process in the franchise is our offensive line has been, you know, horrifically injured. Our tackles have not been right since day one. Nick Chubb's not on the field, and he's our best offensive player. So I think there's probably some crossing of the fingers and going, okay, let's hope that we can get the offensive line healthier as we move on. We can get Nick Chubb back into the fold, and we can turn ourselves into a Nick Chubb, you know, dominated team that Deshaun throws the ball 20 times a game. And that's how they try to deal with it. But the options there are they're limited. They're nothing. Like, and I have yet to hear of a realistic out. And that's not just from inside the organization, but I think, you know, everyone. I just want one person to give me something where I'm like, yeah, that's a realistic thing that you could do. I just don't see it.
I like
Paul,
the extinction level event. That's some good writing there.
Look, as a general manager, you don't want to do that. As a head coach, you don't want to do that because you know, okay, we're going back to the studs and we'll deal as many players as we can by the trade deadline. And we know we're going to, you know, part company with Deshaun after the season, and that's going to lead to us having to, you know, cut a number of other players. And we're basically going to go back to completely rebuilding this thing. And, you know, that's going to be through draft picks. That's going to be through a total 100% reboot. I don't think anybody there has the stamina to do that. I really don't.
Whatever you do with him, it's 2 years in purgatory with a two-time winner of Coach of the Year, right?
Yep.
I mean, you've just killed yourself. On the other end of this, you got a team like Washington that seems like it's been in similar dire straits to the Browns, and is finding a way out. I don't think anybody foresaw things going as well for them as they have. Cliff Kingsbury rehabilitation project here going spectacularly well. Do you think he winds up on head coaching search lists after this if it goes like this?
I am enthused by what's going on in Washington from the standpoint of I hate seeing any franchise in the league. I hate bad football. So to see a team start to come to life is entertaining. It's fun to watch. But I am a big – anytime I look at any team all the time, beginning of the season, end of the season, whatever, I always look at the schedule. And I early on I started to get over my skis of Washington where I'm like, Jayden Daniels is unbelievable. He makes the decisions that he makes, the way he's been able to protect himself with an offensive line that is – almost as bad as the Patriots. I mean, that's not a good line. I think he has been exquisite at making the right decisions under Cliff's tutelage, but also making the right decisions just from an in-game perspective of knowing let's not get myself killed here. Let's only take, you know, the chances that I need to take, which is what they were scared. You know, he's a rookie. They're like, he's going to go out there. He's going to get his head taken off at some point because he's going to be way too aggressive. And for the most part, he's done a good job. But again, schedule. They lost to Tampa Bay to open the season. Then they beat the Giants, a Bengals team that's jacked up, an Arizona team that's still in its own state of rebuild, and a Cleveland Browns team that's jacked up. Okay, you're 4-1. It's fun. That's great. But it's against a lot of terrible teams. But the upside for you is you're going to go to Baltimore this week. Lamar versus Jayden Daniels is going to be an amazing game. It's going to be fun. It's going to be a good measuring stick game. Even if you tank there, then you got Carolina, Chicago, the New York Giants.
Whoa.
You have a Pittsburgh team where they can't score points, right? So the schedule stacks up really well for them to continue to have this kind of output. And you asked me about Cliff. I don't know, man. I don't know. I have yet to hear someone say, wow, Cliff has learned so much from the mistakes that he made in Arizona, and then here's what this offense looks like that proves to us what he has learned. And that doesn't even deal with like the culture failures that he had inside the Arizona Cardinals. I think he's resuscitating himself. I don't know that he's I don't know. I guess I would be surprised if all of a sudden he just jumps right to the back of the, you know, the top of lists again. I know he's an offensive guy and he's had all this other success, but that Arizona thing was so bad. And I mean, even from a culture standpoint, that people know that, you know, and that's going to be something he's going to have to shoulder if he does get back into the, you know, that sort of interview circuit.
Well, Charles, great stuff as always. We're sorry that Rex Road was too busy being at the beach to join us today on the program.
No, no, but, hey, look, I like having PK. I get a little PK time. I enjoy that. Who did the rant today?
Everyone likes an upgrade. I did a classic rant today. So good. So good that it's going to be tweeted out and you should listen to it. I might text it to you.
Yes.
I love that it wasn't just a rant. It was a classic rant.
Classic. It was. Well, the rant has gone to hell. Rex Road doesn't rant anymore. He's like, oh, I have 15 minutes, and here's a topic.
I mean, but Paul, why would you be cranky, you know, when you can take vacation
in the middle of October?
Right. That's true.
Yeah.
Life's good for Rex Road.
Yeah. You're absolutely right.
Oh,
if there's sand in your toes, you've got no anger.
He's got soft. He's just gotten soft.
He really has. Charles, thanks, man. We'll talk to you next week.
All right, take care.
Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports, our guest on Robbie and Rex. We'll react to what Charles had to say. It is also time for the first edition of the season of Preds Pick to Click. Coming up next as well, be the first caller at 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. If you guess a goal scorer for the Predators tonight, you'll win a pair of tickets to a future Nashville Predators home game. We'll do all that coming up next. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.